is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, hoop heads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish home machine. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is former NBA player CJ Watson, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering new subscribers 10% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code SAVE10 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its play bank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball.
Coaches, do you have a point guard or leader you're going to be counting on next season to run the show for you? Don't leave next season to chance. Thousands of coaches send their players to a point guard college camp each summer to learn to think the game, lead a team, and run the show. Your players will be smarter, better leaders, and better equipped to foster a championship culture next season in practice and in your locker room. I've seen firsthand how PGC camps have had a huge impact on players and coaches that I know, both on and off the court. You can go to pgcbasketball.com to find a 5-day, 4-night camp near you. That's pgcbasketball.com. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klintzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight. We are tipping off a late night, or I guess early morning on Saturday, playoff preview. We are going to try to set ourselves up with a time limit since we are tipping off at almost 1 a.m. Eastern time, Jay.
Yeah, we're tipping off at 1 a.m. Mike, I have to tell you something. I went and watched the game at a sports bar tonight.
You did?
Do you know how amazing that was?
Really?
I went. My buddy who I haven't seen since the pandemic started, sent me a text saying, "Hey, do you want to go watch the first half of the Warriors game?" And I went to BW3 and watched the first half of the Warriors game. First time in a year and a half I'd even seen him, so it was fantastic.
We're both vaxxed.
He's been vaxxed since January. I don't know. So it was awesome to be able to go hanging out with him, talk to him, and watch some basketball. So I was excited.
Hey, we might have an in-person podcast in our future at some point here.
Yeah, very soon, hopefully. I mean, maybe.
Who knows, man?
All right, so I think we're going to talk first, Mike, about the playing games a little bit. So we're just going to kind of talk about it, and we're going to talk about key takeaways from the playing games. And then we'll go through each series. We'll start with the East and then the West. Does that sound like a good plan?
Sounds like a good plan. Here we go. 5 minutes. Timer is being set now.
All right. So here's what I want to take away. I think the playing games added an awesome 4 nights of basketball. However, I don't know how I feel, because I think 3 of the 4 teams we picked to make it through, with the exception being the last game that happened tonight with the Golden State and Memphis, like, I don't think there's any chance Memphis wins a game against Utah. I think there's, and we'll talk about that later. I think Golden State would have been way more intriguing and interesting. So I don't know. Like, I get the play-in theory and all this excitement. And yes, Memphis, congratulations. I don't want to, like, rip that away from you. But, man, I would have much rather watched Golden State play against Utah than I'm going to want to watch Memphis play against Utah personally. I don't know how you feel on it, but that's kind of where my headspace is on that.
I don't know. I mean, Golden State stinks. I mean, let's face it. I mean,
but it's so much more fun to watch Steph play.
I don't disagree with you. I definitely would have liked to see Steph go and play in a 7-game series. I told you the other day, and being a Cleveland fan, obviously there was a certain level of disdain that you reached for Steph. But prior to the 4 finals, when Steph was just coming up and he was early in his career, I remember calling up my dad after watching the Warriors play live in person at the Cue and saying, man, Curry is my favorite guy to watch in the league. And not only is it his shooting, but just the way there's nobody else who moves off the ball like he does. And there's nobody else who just forces a defense to react to them no matter where he is on the floor, whether he has the ball or he doesn't have the ball. He just has amazing footwork. He has amazing shot-making skills. And certainly he's, if not the most entertaining player in the league, he's right. I mean, he's certainly in the top 5. So, yes, from that standpoint, I think you definitely – I can understand your sentiment of wanting to watch Golden State. I think I'd probably feel the same way. And yet at the same time, I mean, the rest of that Warriors team is – I mean, they are bad.
Man, that Draymond – did Draymond a chance to win the game? That was a really nice layup.
That shot was horrible. I mean, clearly he wasn't – as he set off down the lane, he clearly was not thinking shot. And it was just interesting that Memphis just said, hey, man, we're not letting you pass. Just go ahead and take that shot. And the thing that he threw up there, that runner, had – absolutely no chance of going in. So, look, can Memphis win that series against Utah? No. Can Memphis win a game? Here's what I'll say for Memphis is Ja is really good. He's going to still have to get better with his jump shot, and he's going to have to be able to knock down threes, I think, at a higher rate than what he can right now at this moment. But he's really good. And we said it back when he came out in the draft. The thing I liked most about him was his passing, and I still think that he's an A-list passer, and that team has a bunch of competent players, and I think they really compete and they play hard. Now, is that enough to overcome the talent disparity with Utah? It's not. But if Donovan Mitchell is still not 100%,
no, Mike, it's still no.
Look, I'm not saying they're going to win. They're not going to win that series. They are not going to win that series. But can they win a game or two against Utah? I would be surprised if they get swept. I mean, I think they get at least one. And I could even see a world where they get two, because I think they play hard. And you're going to get a big, huge Morant game at some point during the series where maybe he can carry them to a win. So my takeaway from the play-in in that standpoint is, yeah, I would have liked to see Golden State. It's surprising that they didn't make it. They lost two very, very close games and as a result are out. The league's happy that the Lakers moved on. Phoenix is not happy that the Lakers moved on.
Mike is not happy that the Lakers moved on.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of rooting against the Lakers, but I mean, I don't care. In the long run, it's probably better from an entertainment standpoint that LeBron and the Lakers are still in. And then in the Eastern Conference, I think we were both surprised that the Celtics were able to beat the Wizards in that first 7-8.
That wasn't the most surprising outcome. That Indiana Pacers just demolition. That was the demolition derby in the Pacers-Charlotte game. I know you picked the Pacers, but you could have never envisioned that they were going to win by as much as they were going to win.
No, I didn't anticipate that. But then the Pacers come around, you know, then they turn around and throw a stink bomb at the Wizards and are completely horrible, and the Wizards still end up getting in. So I would have much rather seen, in all honesty, I think I would have rather seen it reversed. I would have liked to see the Wizards get that. There's our timer. I would have liked to seen the Wizards win that first game and get a chance to play against the Nets,
yeah,
and have the Celtics playing against the Sixers. But oh well. All right, we are moving on.
Okay, look at us. All right, so I feel like we're on, like, Pardon the Interruption. We're just gonna. I don't know if you ever watched that show, Mike, but you know.
I do. Well, I haven't watched it in a while. I used to watch it all the time when I worked out in my. That was in my pre-podcast days. Now I'm just podcasting and listening to podcasts while I'm exercising. But in the past, I was definitely down with Tony and Mike. So
yeah, Tony and Mike, congrats to them. They've been on the air for a long time. Anyways,
yeah, it's incredible how long they've been on.
Them and Around the Horn has been like the 5 to 6 o'clock block forever. So yep. Anyways, okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to go in order, and I'm going to take the lead on the East, and I'm going to say the series that I'm most anticipating, and we're going to work our way backwards to the worst series. The series I'm least anticipating. Does that make sense? We want to go that direction, right, Mike?
That makes total. Yeah, that's the way okay, we want to go. Yes.
I think the series that I'm most anticipating, despite the fact that I really don't like, I mean, I don't like either of these teams very much, but just because it's a rematch of last year, Mike, I'm going to pick Milwaukee Miami as my number one series in the Eastern Conference. Because
clock has started.
I want to see, can Miami replicate what they did in the bubble and knock off Milwaukee? Will Budenholzer do something other than play Giannis 36 minutes in a playoff game? Will the additions of Jrue Holiday matter? Or will the Bucks still lay an egg? And are we finally going to be free of the Budenholzer effect over Giannis? What is going to happen? I don't know. I just think this is intriguing. Can Heat culture, despite the fact that they are seemingly outgunned, can they knock off the Milwaukee Bucks again? I don't think so. I'm picking Milwaukee to win this series. I think they win in 5 games. I think Miami wins 1 game. But I am just intrigued by this game because it is a rematch of last year. These are two competent teams. Whereas I look at the rest of the Eastern Conference and I see one team that's probably good, one team that's not very good, and then the other series that we'll get to in a little bit. It's just two teams that are blah to me. Like so that's why I'm going to say that this is in the Eastern Conference, and I think the Western Conference is way more intriguing in my opinion. But this is my series in the Eastern Conference that is my most intriguing.
All right, this is my most intriguing series in the whole NBA, and definitely would be in the Eastern Conference. But I think this is the most interesting one across the whole league, and it's interesting on a couple of levels. One is coming down the last week of the regular season. Milwaukee had an opportunity to maybe tank their way out of or play their way out of, try to win games and get out of that Miami series. There were some things that they could have potentially done to be able to avoid Miami, and they didn't. They stepped right into this Miami matchup. So kudos to Milwaukee for doing that. Now, maybe it'll come back to burn them, but certainly from a confidence standpoint and coming in trying to say you believe in yourself, I think that was a good route for this team especially to take. Your points that you made about Mike Budenholzer are excellent. They're ones that we've continued to make throughout this entire season, that whatever the Bucks did in the regular season is pretty much irrelevant. It only matters once the playoffs start. Well, the playoffs are here, and we're going to get an opportunity to see whether or not Mike Budenholzer is going to have Giannis out there on the floor for 38, 40, 42, 44 minutes, whatever it takes in order for this team to win. We're also going to see, is Giannis going to actually spend any time guarding the other team's best player? In this case, is he going to spend time guarding Jimmy Butler or guarding Bam Adebayo and not being kind of the rover and putting him on somebody who is of a lesser stature so that he can kind of play his center fielder? I think we're going to see Giannis on Jimmy Butler. I think we're going to see him on Bam Adebayo a lot more than we did in last year's series. I think that this is a huge series for Milwaukee's psyche as well. I think if your prediction comes true and they're able to beat Miami 4-1 and look good doing it, I think that sets them up really nicely for that next series, which is most likely going to be against Brooklyn. And at the same time, you have to wonder and think, and I guess if you're a Milwaukee fan, worry that if Miami comes out and takes game one, especially in Milwaukee, is that going to throw Milwaukee off all the things that they've tried to do across the course of the regular season, whether that's adding some different defensive coverages and they're trying to switch more. And it seems like they're going to be more malleable as a team. But if they lose game one, does that all go away and they fall back into, we can't do that stuff, we got to do what we've always done? And then that paints them into or backs them into a deeper corner. So it'll be interesting to watch this series because there's just a lot going on. As you said, plus the fact that it's a rematch makes it very, very interesting to see how it's going to compare to last year's series. Jrue Holiday to me is the guy who makes the biggest difference in what the Bucks do. I know you talked about your disdain for the potential that PJ Tucker was going to play a pivotal role at any point during the postseason, but I do think that he gives Milwaukee some added flexibility, again, that they just didn't have. They're more flexible both offensively and defensively because of the different lineups that they can throw out there. I'm curious to see whether they can get anything out of their bench from Bobby Portis or Bryn Forbes or anybody at all. If they get anything out of that bench group, especially if Budenholzer is going to play Giannis 34 minutes a game, they're going to need a lot out of their bench, but hopefully that isn't the case. I expect Milwaukee to win this series, and we'll see what happens.
All right. Moving on to my next series, I'm going to go counterintuitive to what I probably sounded like I was going to say in the next pick, but I'm going to go with the Knicks and Atlanta, and here's why I'm going to go with Knicks and Atlanta. I think that the other two series are foregone conclusions on what's going to end up happening. At least this series, it's a toss-up. I think the 4-5 is a toss-up in this case. I think the Knicks could win. I think Atlanta could win if certain things go their way.
Is there any result in this series that would surprise you? Like, is there anything?
I think a sweep. I think a sweep would surprise me.
Would it?
I think a sweep either way would surprise me.
Would it? You can't make a case for a sweep either way.
I can't make a case for I can't make a case for Atlanta sweeping because I think the New York media is too much, and I think the referee game will be on point for the Knicks to win a game at some point. And I think there'll be a Trae Young game where he's going to get like 20 free throws or something, and they're going to win. So I just can't. I think a sweep would surprise me, Mike. But I think, like I said, I think either team could potentially win this series. I'm gonna do it, Mike. I'm gonna pick the Knicks to win the series. I'm gonna pick the Knicks to win the series in six games. I think they will win it in six. I'm excited to watch Julius Randle. I think here's the deal: they've beaten Atlanta in the regular season. I think 2 out of 3 times. And
3-0.
Oh, they did go 3-0. Okay, so I'm pretty sure they blew them out in all the games because they have no one that can guard Julius Randle on the team, and Julius Randle is just a beast. And not to mention, I think this is a bad matchup for Atlanta. I just don't believe in Trae Young. When your best player is 6 foot and he jacks up lots of shots, and you're not Steph Curry. I'm going to pick the Knickerbockers.
So you don't anticipate Trae Young being able to match or exceed his regular season performance. You think he's going to take a step back in the playoffs because when teams can game plan for him, that they could take away the things that he wants to do.
I can't see him winning the series for the Hawks. Someone like our friend DeAndre Hunter or Collins or someone else.
John Collins, Capella.
Yeah, someone else is going to have to stop
Bogdanovich.
And listen, Bogdanovich is probably the wild card for the Atlanta Hawks. The rest of those guys, like, I don't see them making – I mean, they'll play good roles, but I don't see any of them going, okay, here, let me drop to 28 on them to win them the game. I just don't see that happening. So that's why I got to pick the Knickerbockers in this series. Your take, Mike.
Trae Young's going to have to be really good in this series for Atlanta to win. Now, is he capable of doing that? Certainly. I mean, he showed it over the course of his 3 years in the league that he's capable of putting up big offensive numbers. This will be his first opportunity to see what playoff basketball looks like, and I think where he's going to get hurt is at the other end of the floor. Now, the question becomes, is Julius Randle the guy that they're just kind of running the LeBron offense where he's calling Trae Young's guy up to get involved in the pick and roll and they've got a switch or they got a double or whatever it is that they have to do? I'm not sure that the Knicks are super equipped to be the right team to use that kind of strategy to exploit Trae Young. But I honestly expect from an offensive standpoint, I expect Trae Young to have a really good series. And I look at the rest of Atlanta's roster, and since Bogdanovich has gotten healthy, Atlanta's offense has gotten healthy. And part of what I think about when I think about Bogdanovich is I just I just keep remembering that had Milwaukee waited 2 weeks or 3 weeks, whatever, to announce that they had traded for him, that he could be in the Milwaukee, he could be in a Milwaukee Bucks uniform and he'd look really, really good if you added him to what they already have. That being said, I like Atlanta's talent. I think that they have pieces. This series to me comes down to, I think you know what you're going to get out of Julius Randle. I think Randle's going to be really good offensively. I think he's going to do all the things that he's done in the regular season. Trae Young, I think I have a few more question marks about. I'm not sure if he's going to be able to replicate what he does in the regular season. I'm not sure if he's going to be able to replicate that in the playoffs. That being said, I think Atlanta's talent overall, going position by position, is better than New York's. I think New York is probably grittier. I think they're probably better defensively. I think Atlanta's more offensively talented. So it's going to come down to me. The key is going to be the difference between Atlanta's offense and the Knicks' defense. So I'm going to pick the Hawks.
Oh,
I'm going to say the Hawks in seven. Even though I've kind of been a Trae Young detractor, for some reason I have a feeling that this Knicks team is kind of a little bit of smoke and mirrors. And aww. I think Atlanta's talent is better. So I'm going to pick Atlanta in seven.
We just lost our five listeners from New York, Mike. I'm very disappointed
sorry about
in your
that.
Statement.
Sorry about Come that. On. Sorry about that. Sorry about that.
Anyway, I'm just messing with you. Anyways, so, all right, my next series, I'm going to go to the 1-8 series. And it's because I don't have any faith in the Boston Celtics. So I can't, and we both disdain, hate the Brooklyn Nets. So I'm picking that Philly, the Philly-Washington series, obviously. There are several questions here. Will Joel Embiid make it through a series without getting injured, getting the stomach flu, having intestinal issues? Will he be able to do that? That's issue one. Issue two, how is Ben Simmons going to play? Is he going to play like he was playing the first half of the season, or is he going to play how he played the second half of the season? Three, Russell Westbrook and Bradley Beal, what are they going to look like? Is Bradley Beal even close to being functional, or is he just hurt? Russell Westbrook, is he going to continue? Is he going to play like he did in the first game of the play-in tournament, or is he going to play like he did yesterday when he played out of his mind? So I think this has to be more. This is way more intriguing than Nets Brooklyn because I are not Nets. Not Nets Brooklyn, Nets Celtics.
Celtics.
Yeah, so because I think that's a foregone conclusion, and this is a foregone conclusion too. I mean, I think the Sixers are easily going to win this series. I'm going to say, Mike, that they're going to win in five because I think the Wizards will steal one somewhere. The game three at home or something. Westbrook will have a ridiculous stat line, and Embiid might have a hangnail or something, and he can't play. So I'm gonna say that the Wizards are going to steal one. But I think the Sixers easily can win the series.
This postseason is just a huge referendum on Simmons and Embiid. I mean, it just is. There's no other way to frame this for the 76ers. You look at the way that this bracket broke out for them in the Eastern Conference, and you have Brooklyn as the two. Then you have Milwaukee and Miami, two teams that theoretically should be stiff challengers for winning the East that have to play each other in the first round. Then those two teams got to go and most likely get through the Nets, or the Nets have to get through them. Meanwhile, Philly gets this shell of a Washington team, and then in the second round is going to get the winner of the Knicks and Atlanta, which are clearly two teams that are a notch below the Bucks and Heat. So this is set up for the Sixers to have two relatively easy series and then should be primed and ready to go for the Eastern Conference Finals.
Theoretical easy series, Mike. Theoretically easy.
Theoretical. I agree. And here's why it's theoretical. Because Ben Simmons has, I think, he has a lot to prove in this playoff run because he's got to be able to impact the game in all of the usual ways that he impacts it during the regular season with his ability to get the ball off the board, push it down the floor, and set up his teammates for threes while he's going downhill in a fast break situation. We all know playoff basketball typically slows down at least to some degree, and there's more half court possessions than there are during a regular season game. And the question then becomes, what is Ben Simmons doing while the Sixers are running half court offense? Does he become a complete and utter liability? So I think it'll be interesting to see how he himself adjusts and figures out what he should be doing on the floor. I think it's going to be interesting to watch the Sixers playoff offense under Doc Rivers as compared to what it looked like under Brett Brown. It's a huge postseason for Ben Simmons to figure out whether or not this pairing works long term. And then Embiid, you already mentioned it. I mean, it comes down to, can this guy stay on the floor? Can he stay on the floor as a result of injury? Can he stay on the floor as a result of conditioning? Can he stay on the floor as a result of illness? He hasn't shown that he can have a healthy 2-month stretch across the playoffs being the most dominant player on the floor, which is what he's going to have to be if Philly's going to win an NBA title, which is clearly their goal, which they're clearly set up for pretty nicely to be able to at least get into that conversation. Yeah, I don't expect Washington to put up much of a fight here. I think you said it best. I think they'll probably get a game when Beal and Westbrook, you know, combine for 65 points in one of the games, probably a game in Washington. But Philly just has too much. I mean, defensively, when Philly is right and they're locked in, they are huge and they are menacing, and they can definitely be the best defensive team in the league if they want to. So yep. I'm going to say Sixers in five as well.
All right. All right. That moves us into the last series in the Eastern Conference. And I mean, I don't really have much to say on this series because it's going to be interesting to watch the three big three of the Nets play together and see how they all work. But this is going to be utter annihilation. I think of the four Eastern Conference series, this has got sweep written all over it. Because A, the Celtics' best player is Tatum, and he maybe he can get a go, have a game where he goes crazy, and maybe Kemba has a good game, but I just don't see how any way, shape, or form they stop the Nets, and they can outscore the Nets. I think there's zero chance. I think this is a sweep, and I think the Nets are taking it, Mike.
I just don't see how Boston scores with the Nets. I mean, we could probably say that going into every series, looking at it, going, man, how do you keep up and sustain with the Nets? All that being said, I expect this series to be, I don't know, 4-0, maybe 4-1, maybe Boston gets one simply because the Nets get bored, or who knows what could happen.
Kyrie might be taking a vacation.
Maybe. I mean, the best thing you could say is that, look, if everyone in that series is playing at their best, the Nets have the best three players in the series. And you
might even... Tatum's, well, okay. Yeah.
Tatum's really, really good. He had 50 in the play-in game to get him there. He really, the second half of the season, he took it up another level. He's really, really good. I still think he's still a step short of being a true superstar because I just don't know yet that he makes his teammates better with his playmaking. He's a really, really good scorer. I think if he's going to take that next step in his career to go from being a top, let's say, 15 player in the league to being a top 7 player in the league, he's going to have to add some more playmaking to his game in order to be able to get there. But he's the 4th best player in this series, and the 3 best players are all on the Brooklyn Nets.
And we can make an argument right now, Mike. I can't believe I'm about to say this, Mike, that the 5th best player in this series is?
Joe Harris? Blake Griffin?
Blake Griffin. He's been playing really, really well for them.
I mean, he's been playing his role well.
Yeah, I'm just
saying.
He's
been doing the things they need him to do. Look, it could be. I mean, he could be. I think if Jaylen Brown was there, the series is at least a little bit more interesting because then Boston, again, this is theoretical. Theoretically, then Boston has a guy to match up with.
Yep.
Well, they just have a guy that they can put on each of the Nets' big three that at least you look at the matchup and you say, that's not a complete mismatch. Whereas now, okay, Tatum can guard whatever. He can guard one of Harden.
Yeah, he's going to have to guard Durant.
Right? And yeah, and then Marcus Smart guards probably Harden. And then, I mean, you know, is Kemba going to be chasing around Kyrie? Good luck with that. I guess you could make the counter argument that Kyrie is going to have to chase around Kemba Walker. And that's another thing with the Celtics. Who knows what Kemba Walker you're getting? It seems like Kemba's maybe rounding into form a little bit. But I've said it the last couple playoff runs for the Celtics. Kemba's a guy that I think if you're at all worried that he's going to hurt you, I think you can scheme your way out of Kemba Walker killing you just because of his size. And you could do things that can take the ball out of his hands. And I just don't think Boston has the weapons to be able to remotely score with the Nets. And because they don't have Jaylen Brown, their chances of slowing down the Nets is very, very minimal. Now, I think we're all interested to see what these three guys look like together. They've played, I think, 202 minutes or something on the floor together this whole season. I've said it all along, as good as they potentially could be when all three of them are on the floor, I just think that they're three weird personalities, and it keeps getting proven over and over again. Plus the fact that I don't know that Durant could play and stay healthy for 2 full months. Kyrie, we know his injury history from here in Cleveland, and plus his flaky nature, to put it kindly. And then I think we're clear with where we stand on James Harden and his ability to come through in the clutch. So I don't trust this team from a mental standpoint. They're gonna rout the Boston Celtics. I don't have any doubt about that. I think that in the next series against Milwaukee or against Miami, if Miami were to get past the Bucks, I think then it becomes a whole different animal. And this team, I think, is going to be very good as a front runner. And who knows? Maybe they'll never fall behind. Maybe these guys will stay healthy and they'll just be so good offensively that it won't matter. But I think that the first time that they take a hit and they face some adversity, I think that it's going to be very easy for them to start pointing fingers at each other, and that team's going to disintegrate. And I just don't see them winning an NBA title, but clearly they're going to win this series. I don't know, 4-0, 4-1. It's not going to be close.
Yeah. Okay. So before we move to the West, Mike, let's make our pick for the East. Who do you think represents the East? I'm sticking with the Nets.
I'm going to stick with the Bucks. I'm not going to waver on that either. Am I fully 100% confident? No, absolutely not. It's like what I've been saying for the last 2 months. I don't trust any of these teams. You can make a case for, I think it's going to be I don't think Miami can get there. I don't think Miami can beat Milwaukee.
It's one of those three, Mike.
Yeah, I don't think Miami can beat Milwaukee, Brooklyn, and the Sixers. I just don't think they're equipped at this point. I don't think they're equipped to do that. So it's going to be one of those three. You could tell me any of the three of them, and I would believe you, but I'm going to stick with Milwaukee at this point.
Okay. All right. Let's move to the Western Conference, and you're going to take charge of the Western Conference. Before we do that, let's have a word from our sponsors.
Hey, hoopheads. We all hate ankle sprains, and they happen way too often. Ankle injuries are the number one sports-related injury. Arise is trying to change that. With the iFast, your athletes get preventative protection and full mobility. Athletes no longer need to wear bulky braces that limit performance and give mediocre protection. Anyone playing sports should be using these products. Keep your athletes in the game. Don't wait for them to get hurt to take action. Visit www.arise.com/teampricing to learn more. That's ARYSE.com. Hey, coaches, parents, and group leaders. I want to introduce you to our newest sponsor, SnapRaise. SnapRaise is the nation's largest digital donation platform built to help teams, youth groups, and clubs raise money quickly and efficiently without selling products. SnapRaise builds your group a customizable campaign website, and students use their mobile devices to connect and engage with their biggest fans. My son's high school team used SnapRaise this season, and our team raised all the money they needed to fund their season, and then some. Getting SnapRaise started is quick and free. Just visit SnapRaise.com, and you'll get connected to a local SnapRaise expert in no time.
All right, we are back, and we are now going to focus our attention on the Western Conference, and Mike is going to go with the most anticipated series in his mind, and we're going to kind of work from there. Mike's going to take the lead on this, and then I'm going to jump in after Mike. Go ahead, Mike.
All right. So my most intriguing series in the Western Conference is the Denver-Portland matchup. Mm. And I think this is probably the one that it's the most interesting because I think these two teams, to me, are at this point the biggest enigmas or the most – they have the most unknowns or the most questions to answer from a personnel standpoint. And what I mean by that is Denver has a lot of guys that are nicked up. They obviously lost Jamal Murray and kind of kept it going behind Jokic and Michael Porter Jr. But they're still, I think, trying to figure out what are we going to be, especially at playoff time. How do we replace the 50-point bombs that Jamal Murray was dropping in last year's postseason? Can Michael Porter – I don't think he's going to put up multiple 50-point games in a series – but could Michael Porter be a guy that averages 25 a game in this series and in series moving forward? If he can be, and if he is, then Denver becomes a legitimate threat to win the Western Conference. If Michael Porter Jr. is averaging 17 points a game, I think it becomes really, really difficult. And Jokic is going to have to just be, he's going to have to play at an unbelievable level no matter what. But if Porter Jr. is only above average and not great, then that puts a huge amount of pressure on Jokic. So Denver's questions for me are, what are they figuring out with their personnel based on the guys that they're missing and the guys that are nicked up? And then on the other hand, you have Portland, who all season long has been injured and waiting for guys to get back. McCollum misses, whatever, 6 or 7 weeks. Nurkic has been out for the majority of the season. Now both of those guys are back. You added Norman Powell at the trade deadline. And it seemed like Portland, we kind of gave them up for dead there like 3 weeks ago.
Oh, you went, did, Mike. You gave them up into, for dead. Right, you know I'm a Portland stan.
So, you know, Dame went through a little bit of a down stretch where he wasn't playing nearly as well. And then all of a sudden, they righted the ship. And I don't have the stats in front of me, but I know that their starting lineup when they have Nurkic, their defense is much, much, much better when they have their starting lineup and they have Nurkic in there. Now, we all know that Dame and CJ are not the stoutest backcourt from a defensive standpoint, but the fact that Denver doesn't have Jamal Murray sort of negates that weakness to some degree. So I think there's just a lot of intriguing things going on here as both teams are trying to find themselves and figure out who they are for different reasons. Denver, because of what's been subtracted from their roster, and Portland because of what's been added to their roster over the last couple of weeks. So I mean, to me, this is a long series. It's interesting because I've been saying all along that I still think Denver can win the Western Conference. And yet I look at this series and I expect it to be a very, very tough series for the Nuggets. I wouldn't be surprised at all if Portland wins it, which sounds crazy based on the fact that I've been kind of stumping for Denver all year, both pre and post Jamal Murray injury. I'm going to say Denver in seven, but it is not going to be easy.
I'm going Blazers in seven, Mike. I'm going to go there. I think the Blazers are going to get the job done. They're going to move on to the next round, and I'm excited about it. Listen, you said a lot of great points. The big point is this: when Portland plays all together, when everyone is healthy. And that's a when and if is a big thing here. But if they're all healthy, they're just really, really good defensive. Nurkic down low. And like you said, who's guarding Dame and CJ from the Nuggets? You know, and you can't underplay the fact that the Nuggets completely rolled over in that last game of the season against Portland, telling them basically, well, we want to play you in the playoffs, so we're just going to throw this game. To add that to the chip on their shoulder, Portland saying, oh, they think they can beat us. And the thing is this, Nuggets played their starters some minutes. Like, it wasn't like they played, but they eventually, you could tell they kind of threw in the towel in the second half. But still, you can't add that, you know, not quantify that and say, hey, they wanted to play us because they believed they could beat us. Well, now we're going to show them they screwed up. So I just think Portland has a shot. for sure here, and I'm going to say Portland in seven. That's what I'm going to go with, Mike.
I just don't buy that Jokic is going to win the MVP and then lose in the first round. I just don't see that happening. I think he's going to have a huge, huge series.
Mike, correct me if I'm wrong. Correct me if I'm wrong. Giannis did that 2 years ago.
No, they lost to the Raptors in the Eastern Conference Finals 2 years ago.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
So remember, they were up 2-0 and they had a big lead in game three, and then they kind of fell apart, and then that whole series turned after that game three.
It wasn't last year either, right? Giannis, that was the second round they lost to Miami.
Last year was the second round. Yeah, last year they beat – who they beat? I think they beat Orlando in the first round last year. The second round was – right when they had the social justice thing and the Bucks led the protest. And there was a lot of weird – I mean, you could honestly look – it's easy if you're into excuse making.
Oh, God.
I'm just saying it's easy to make – I'm not saying I am. I'm just saying
you're making excuses for Milwaukee. Go ahead. Keep going.
No, I've said this all along. I don't have tremendous confidence in the Bucks because I still think there are issues that they have to work out. But so does every other team, as we continue to say. But if you wanted to be an apologist for the Bucks, you could say, hey, look, if we finish off that game three the year before and that series never goes and turns, and then Milwaukee goes and plays that injured Golden State team, I mean, I think Milwaukee beats that injured Golden State team in the finals if they were to get there. And then last year you have the bubble, you have the protest, you have just the things that went on in Milwaukee. I mean, look, it is what it is. And Giannis has got to be better, and Budenholzer's got to be better. And if they're not, they're going to lose again. But you could make excuses.
We're violating our 5-minute rule, Mike.
We're violating our 5-minute rule.
That was overtime brought to you by Thrive Fantasy.
That's it.
Prop up today.
That's it. All right. My second most intriguing series is Dallas and the Clippers. I know we saw this series last year.
Wow.
The reason why
I would not have picked that as Go ahead.
All right. It's fair. The reason why I like this series is the same reason I would have liked it last year. And I think I like it even more this year because of the angst that exists in Clipperland. And I just don't know. Like, if you're the Clippers at this point, like, it's going to take a lot to be able to shed the chains of those demons from giving up the 3-1 lead and from blowing games, having huge leads in the second half against Denver. Because if you're the Clippers and you get up 3-1, normally you would feel like, oh man, we got this. You know, we're confident, we're rolling. If you're the Clippers this year, you're like, oh man, we were here last year. We got to, you know, if we don't start out playing well in this. And it's just, I think there's a lot of doubt that can creep in. And it's not good when doubt creeps in when you're winning and when you have an advantage. So I think psychologically, I'm not sure where the Clippers are at with that. And we know that at least in recent years, Paul George hasn't always been at his best in the biggest moments. Kawhi usually has been, although last year in those last three games in the Denver series, he was good, but not great like they needed him to be. Will Ty Lue make a difference for the Clippers? Maybe. Will Rondo, playoff Rondo, make an appearance and have an impact on the Clippers? I don't know. I said last summer when they signed Marcus Morris to his $64 million contract that was the official death knell of the Clippers' title chances. There's a lot not to like about the Clippers, and yet they might be the most talented team from 1 through 10 in the Western Conference. So I don't know what to make of them. On the other side of it, you have Dallas, you have Luka, who in his third year is right there with the very best in the game at being able to control a game, being able to play make his teammates into being the best that they can be, into being an almost unguardable, unsolvable puzzle for opponents just because of the variety of ways that he can hurt you offensively. He can hurt you by driving past you, getting into the lane, bumping you off with his strength and scoring. He can hit you with the step back jump shot that he's been shooting better from 3-point range. He obviously can hurt you with his playmaking. There's really nothing out on the basketball floor from an offensive standpoint that he can't do. Now the question becomes for Dallas, is Porzingis going to stay healthy? I think the answer, if gun to your head, the answer is no, he's not going to stay healthy. But if he does, I think this becomes a really, really difficult matchup for the Clippers. And it seems silly to say with two great wing defenders like Paul George and Kawhi Leonard that they can throw at Luka, but Luka's proven it over and over and over again that doesn't matter who you put on him. He's going to get to the spots where he wants to get to. He's going to be able to score when he wants to score. He's going to be able to set up his teammates. And I think this Dallas team, we know they're well coached with Rick Carlisle. I think they're bought into being a team that revolves around Luka, which you don't always get, especially with a young player, that teammates sometimes can be resentful or it doesn't look like the team's having much fun. I think this Dallas team looks like they're connected. And I think that they're primed to win this series. And I'm going to pick Dallas in seven.
Wow. I like the pick, Mike, because I hate the Clippers. I despise the Clippers. I would like nothing more than to see them lose this series. I just think they're too good. And I just think that once you lose, get past Luka and maybe Porzingis, if he's healthy and stays healthy, they just don't have enough firepower and enough defense to stop the Clippers. So I'm going to pick the Clippers in six. I just think, listen, I know, once again, the Clippers' angst is going to play a role here in some way, shape, or form. But I just think there's no way that the Dallas wins the series. I want them to win the series. But I'm going with my head instead of my heart here, sadly, Mike. I just don't think they have enough to do it. I think the Clippers are just too stacked. Playoff Rondo is going to kick into effect, maybe. And Ty Lue's going to do his thing. So I'm going to pick the Clippers here, Mike. In six, I'm going to go six games.
All right, my next series is the Phoenix Suns and Los Angeles Lakers.
I'm honest with you, Mike. I thought that was your number one series, to be honest with you. I thought that was going to be number one. That would have been my number one.
Well, here's the thing for me is I'm not sure who it is that I'm tuning in that I really want to watch in this series. In other words, look, I've watched a lot of LeBron. LeBron's great, but I know what LeBron is going to look like if he's healthy, and I know what I'm getting from him. And that shot the other night against Golden State was an incredible shot, a clutch shot, and one
hits the middle rim.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to go down as one of the best shots of his career. Now, it's obviously early in the playoffs, but it's still one that's going to be remembered. So when I think about watching LeBron, I've watched it for 16 years or whatever it is, whatever year he is, 16, 17, I don't even know at this point. But regardless, we've watched it over and over again. I don't find Anthony Davis to be all that compelling as a watch. Chris Paul, I appreciate what he does as a basketball player, and I appreciate his ability to control and orchestrate a game. But
come on, you're tuning in for Andre Drummond, Mike.
I'm not tuning in for Andre Drummond. I'm not tuning in for DeAndre Ayton. I don't know. There's not a whole lot of one-on-one matchups that I'm excited about, because you look at the strengths of the one team, and if you're Phoenix, who's guarding LeBron and AD? So I guess on that end of the floor, you're probably going to have Mikal Bridges guarding LeBron, probably. And you're going to have DeAndre Ayton guarding.
Because Crowder's hurt, right? Crowder's hurt.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're going to have Anthony Davis being guarded by DeAndre Ayton. Are you particularly compelled by either of those matchups?
I think I'm compelled to see how long until DeAndre Ayton gets posterized.
I guess you can see, hey, DeAndre Ayton's first time in the playoffs. How's he going to be able to hold up? Maybe that's intriguing, but I don't know. It doesn't excite me all that much. And then on the other side of the floor, you know, who's guarding Chris Paul? Kentavious Caldwell-Pope? Caruso? I mean, I don't know. Is that an exciting matchup too for you?
No, probably not. Listen, I understand your point. And then
Devin Booker is going to be guarded by whichever one of those other guys, you know, whichever one's not guarding Chris Paul is probably going to be guarding Devin Booker. So, like, I just don't see the strengths of each team don't match up with the strengths of the other team. And I guess Denver, Portland, you could probably make an argument that it's kind of similar, that Jokic, you know, is being, it's, you know, Dame and CJ and whatever. Anyway, my point here is that there's not any individual matchup in this series that I'm particularly looking forward to.
Monty Williams versus Frank Vogel?
No. And I think that if the Lakers are healthy, and it's still a big if the Lakers are healthy, I think that Phoenix is going to have a hard time dealing with them. Phoenix, if they're going to win, Phoenix is going to have to shoot the ball really well. Like, they're going to have to shoot plus 40% from three in this series, I think, in order to win. I think they're going to have to make a lot of threes in order to beat the Lakers. And it seems counterintuitive, but Chris Paul likes to play slow, even though, at least traditionally in his career, he's been a quick guy that can move and get up and down the floor, but his teams typically like to play slow. I think that Phoenix offensively at least should want to try to play fast, because once the Lakers set their defense, and they're just big, they're big at every position and they're hard to score against in the half court. I think they finished the season again as the number one defensive team, and they did that without LeBron and AD on the floor for large portions of the season. So they're tough to score against. I think Phoenix is going to have to get out and run a little bit more maybe than they're used to if they want to win this series, and they got to shoot above 40% from three. If they don't, I think it's going to be a fairly easy series for the Lakers. I'm going to go Lakers in six, because I'm still not 100% convinced that the Lakers are healthy. And I'll throw in the caveat that maybe one of these guys goes down in the series and Phoenix is able to get a couple games.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Lakers in six is what I had in my mind, because they're going to have a game where they're just not playing, or they're sore or something. It's just going to happen. Listen, I'm going on record as saying that I like the Lakers' chances to get it to the championship game. I'm not committing to them yet, Mike. We're going to talk about that in a second. But I like their chances if they can get past Phoenix, because I think whoever they play in the second round between Portland and Utah – or not Portland, Portland and Denver, I think that the Lakers match up well against them. So I'm taking the Lakers in six. I could see the Lakers winning in five. This is not a sweep, but I'm going to go Lakers in six.
Really bad break for the Phoenix Suns. That's all I'll say. It's probably
and then they're going to lose Chris Paul in the offseason.
Yeah, if you go back into the history of the NBA, which I didn't do, but I think you would be hard pressed probably to find a more difficult matchup for the two seed than what they're looking at against the Lakers. All right, which leaves our last series and the least intriguing of the Western Conference series for me.
I'm almost ready, really, other than the Nets-Celtics series, this is the least intriguing series in the whole playoffs. Because, I'm sorry, Memphis, you don't stand a chance, in my opinion. Go ahead, Mike. I'm sorry. I don't want to steal your thunder. I just don't see how they even have a chance in this series, quite frankly.
I think you're underestimating Memphis. I'm not saying that Memphis has
they're
a
just
great
gonna
chance.
No, Utah's going to send a pizza. It's not going to be a big deal, Mike. It's over. Mark it down.
I think if Donovan Mitchell is not healthy, that opens the door for Memphis to win a game or two and be competitive. I think if Donovan Mitchell is back and 100% healthy, I think it becomes a lot more difficult. This Memphis team, I will say that they're scrappy and they play hard, and they do have, I don't know if I'd call Morant a superstar yet, but they do have a really, really good player that can go for big numbers in big games. And I expect Morant to have a really good series, and I expect the Grizzlies to compete night in and night out. And if you compete and play hard, you're going to give yourself an opportunity to at least be in games. Now, Utah shot the ball really, really well from three. Their offensive system and the way they move the ball and the way they find open shooters and the way they play together, and having Clarkson coming off the bench being able to provide instant offense. And I think Joe Ingles had a historic three-point shooting season. Utah's really good. We know what Gobert can be on defense. It's going to be a tough series for Memphis, but I think Memphis is scrappy. I think that John Morant is going to have a game in this series where he goes for 35 to 45 points and is going to win them one game. And then Maybe their scrappiness gets them another. I could see this series going to six games. I'm not sure that it gets there. I think we've all seen Utah's struggles in the playoffs when things get tough. I'm just not sure that Memphis is the team that's going to exploit that. I think you get to the next round, and that's where Utah is going to run into a team that is better equipped to battle them and to test them and see what they're made of and see whether or not they are different from more recent Utah teams. I do think this team is better than the Utah teams that we've seen in the last couple of years. I think they're more diverse. I think the fact that Conley has been better this season and gives them another offensive creator to put alongside Donovan Mitchell. I mean, he's still their bucket getter. He's still the guy that's going to get the ball at the end of the shot clock. But Conley is capable of helping out in that area. And we know defensively that they're going to be good. They're going to be solid. The biggest benefit for Utah heading into this thing is that the Lakers won that play-in game and that they weren't staring at playing the Lakers in the first round. And so for that, I'm sure they're very, very thankful. And every time they look down at the other bench and they see the Memphis Grizzlies, they should break out into a big smile and just know that whatever the basketball gods were with them. And that's, I think it'll allow them to at least get into the second round. And then from there, who knows? I mean, could Utah make it to the Western Conference Finals and make it into the NBA Finals? I think they could.
Yeah, I agree with your point, but I just don't see how Memphis makes this series competitive. I'm sorry, Mike. I don't believe in it. I don't care. Donovan Mitchell could be 70%, and I don't give him a chance. No chance. Zero, Mike.
Well, look, I don't think they're going to win the series. I'm just saying I think they can win a game or two. You don't think they can win a game or two? You think this is going to be a sweep?
I think it's five at most. Utah and five.
You got a lot of healthy respect for Utah. Yeah. Who's your guy in Utah? Who do you believe in?
I just don't believe in Memphis.
All right.
Taylor Jenkins didn't challenge that play at the end of the regulation, okay? I was really ready. I had my whole stump speech when I said, remember when we talked about the coach trustworthiness?
Right.
I was ready for that. And then, you know, then the overtime happened and they didn't happen. But I'm telling you, Taylor Jenkins, what are you thinking, man? Like, he even looked at the play. They have they're sitting in the bench looking at the iPads. He's looking at it and doesn't even challenge it. Like, what?
He needed that timeout, man.
For what?
Didn't want to risk it. Didn't want to risk it. He wanted to have that timeout in his back pocket.
Give me a break. He would have won the challenge, Mike. He would have won the challenge. Anyways.
Hoard your timeouts.
I think Utah wins the series in five. The end.
Got it. Okay. All right. So we have gone through all eight first round matchups. We have picked a winner in each one of the matchups. I guess it is now time for us to share our finals picks, see where we stand. See whether we've changed our mind, see whether or not taking the temperature of where we are heading into this first round of the NBA playoffs. I can't believe the playoffs are here. It's so weird that it is almost June and that we're going to be playing the NBA Finals sometime in the middle of July. Very interesting, very different. The rhythm of it feels a little bit off, and yet I'm excited for the playoffs. The first round is always my favorite round because there's just so many games on and there's so many intriguing matchups. And I love that you have the late games all the time from the West Coast that you can stay up and watch here on the East Coast. So I'm excited. I'm super pumped for the first round. Always my favorite round of the NBA playoffs. So go ahead and start. You can give us your finals pick first. Well, and I'll give mine.
I already said the Nets, Mike.
Okay.
I'm going to stick with my pick from last week. I'm going Nets, Clippers. Done.
All right. I'm sticking with Milwaukee in the East. I think it's going to be one of those three teams. I'm sticking with the Bucks. And then in the Western Conference, I have been riding the Denver Nuggets. I am, I guess, more shaky on my Nuggets pick than I am on my Milwaukee pick because I just think there's more teams that I would say in the West, it wouldn't completely surprise me if that team made it through. when I try to think about who would I, if I don't pick Denver, who would I replace them with? And every one of these teams has a potentially fatal flaw or a matchup that as you look down the road, you're like, ooh, I don't know if they match up well against that team. I could see them getting knocked out. The only team that I think that doesn't necessarily correspond to is the healthy Los Angeles Lakers. And yet, I don't know that I'm convinced that both LeBron and AD are going to be healthy throughout this playoff run. So I don't feel good about picking the Lakers because I don't feel good about them making it through the entire run staying healthy. So despite the fact that I'm only maybe 25% confident in Denver, I'm going to stick with my Nuggets pick and say Bucks Nuggets.
All right. Sounds good. We'll see how this shakes out. There it is.
There it is. It is 1:50 a.m. We did stick with our time limit, so that was pretty good. We said that we were going to go around 50 minutes, and we ended up going almost 57 here. We appreciate everyone sticking with us. We are looking forward to covering the NBA playoffs, watching these games, jumping on here, and sharing our thoughts and opinions, and we appreciate you joining us for our NBA episodes.
Mike, don't forget to check out our... On that note, are we going to keep... Are Tuesday nights going to be our thing, or are we just going to kind of do them when we feel like we need to do them? I don't know what you...
That's a good question. I'm not sure what the answer to that question is. I think we may end up being more erratic in our schedule, maybe. I think the plan will be let's do it on Tuesday nights, but if there's something land-breaking that happens, that we may end up having to do some extra ones, and maybe we throw in... Maybe Tuesday night's our main hour podcast, and maybe we throw in some 20-minute mini pods after some late night West Coast games. If something compelling happens on a given night, we'll just have to wait and see. So who knows? It's going to be a fun 2 months of watching the NBA. I think that for so long, the intrigue of who was going to be in the finals was, there was very little intrigue for 4 straight years. Not that we were, not that we felt bad about it when it was the Cavs that were kind of a foregone conclusion to make it to the NBA finals. But it is interesting this year that There's probably legitimately 8, 9, 10 teams that if they show up in the NBA finals this year, you're not going to be super stunned. And that makes for a very exciting playoff. So I'm looking forward to it. We appreciate everyone listening to our NBA pods. Please check out our interview episodes that we put out every Monday and Friday. We've got some good ones coming up. Just put up TJ Rosine from PGC Basketball talking about how to become a master coach in 5 different key areas. Coming up on Monday, we're going to have Jeff Bowles, the head coach at Ohio University. His episode will go up on Monday. So a lot of great content coming up here on the Hoopheads Pod. Make sure you check out the other shows on the network. If you are a fan of a particular team or you're just a basketball fan, please check out what we have going on the Hoopheads Pod Network. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast presented by Head Start Basketball.